You're in touch with the News Authority. WPAN
Providence. Employers, if you're looking for a few good people to fill some of those lesser skilled jobs around your place, here's a tip from the President's Committee on Employment of the Handicapped. Hire mentally retarded men and women who have been trained to work and who are motivated to work. They can deliver messages and file the papers. They can stock the shelves and feed the livestock. They can run the machines and run the errands. What's more, they can be loyal workers who will stay on the job and stay and stay. Records show that their turnover rate is much lower than workers who are not retarded filling similar jobs. To hire mentally retarded workers, get in touch with your local vocational rehabilitation office or get in touch with your local association for retarded citizens. The right person might not be available for your opening right on the spot, but they'll get you somebody, and you'll be pretty happy that you hired mentally retarded people.
Was Fraser said, in effect, as the nation...
Hello, I'm Harry McKenna, and this is Radio Press Conference. My guest tonight is Rhode Island's junior United States Senator, John Hubbard Chafee. Senator Chafee is seeking a second term in the Senate. Last week, we interviewed his endorsed Democratic opponent, former Attorney General Julius C. Michelson. We have also interviewed another aspirant to the Senate, Mrs. Helen Flynn of Middletown. Some of the questions we'll be asking Senator Chafee tonight are his unqualified position now on the special security system and his position after Election Day should he be returned to the Senate. And is it necessary to have a strong gubernatorial candidate in order for his votes to be reflected on other party candidates? Guest interviewer tonight is the chief of the General Bulletin State House staff, M. Charles Baxt. Welcome to Press Conference, Senator Chafee, and let's begin our conversation with this question. Do you look upon your race with Julius Michelson as close, or don't you anticipate any difficulty in being reelected?
First, Harry, I want to say it's a treat to be back with you on Radio Press Conference, and I want to extend greetings, appreciation also for Charlie Baxt being here. I take each race as it comes. I'm not making any predictions except that I'll win, and I'm going to work as hard as I can and continue to do so right up to and including Election Day.
Senator Chafee, I more or less expected that kind of an answer from you, that you're running as you are and so forth. What makes you think you're going to win? You have a formidable opponent in front of you in the person of Julius Michelson, isn't that right?
The reason I am confident that I win, Charlie, is that I
Harry, excuse me. We knew we were going to get into this, didn't we?
The reason I am confident I'm going to win, Harry, is based upon the record that I've achieved over the past 6 years in the United States Senate, plus, of course, the fact that I'm confident that people appreciate the job I did for them as governor for the state and everyone, all citizens, during the 6 years that I was governor. But, of course, what we're particularly concentrating on now is the record during the 6 years that I've been in the Senate. It's a record that has concentrated on doing everything we can to take care of all our people, to advance the economy, to take care of the environment, to protect the elderly, to provide for education, take all possible measures as regards health, particularly keeping people well. And this is a record that I'm proud to run on. And of course, it also involves keeping a strong national defense for our nation. These are issues I'm prepared to defend and support, and I believe they are recognized by the people and appreciated.
Senator Chafee, many Rhode Island senior citizens are listening intently to you tonight, and I would ask you what your precise position is on the Social Security question.
My position on the Social Security question has been unchanged, Harry, ever since I went to the United States Senate, indeed before. And that position is that I am for protecting every earned benefit that the citizens have accrued and to protect the fund so that it's there for present retirees and future retirees. And I've approached this on a nonpartisan basis. For instance, when President Carter, as administration was in office, I supported the increases in the Social Security tax because those increases were needed to protect the fund. And I've given this pledge to the people, and I'll stick by it, just as I have in the past, that the fund will be there, will be protected, And I'll take every necessary measure to make sure that it is there for not only the present retirees, but those in the future.
Well, your answer is a little general, not as precise as I thought it might be. I'm wondering if you're thinking of changing the retirement age from 65 maybe to 68, and possibly if the gods shine upon you and you are returned to the Senate for a second term, would you then recommend cuts in the system? Cuts that you're not recommending now?
No. First of all, I don't know where you got this figure of changing the retirement age from 65 to 68. I've never even heard that suggested.
And well, that was one of the original propositions.
Well, I don't know whose proposition, but I've been on the Finance Committee now for 4 years, and I've never heard that suggestion. As you know, the President appointed a bipartisan commission, which consists of Democrats and Republicans from the Senate, from the House, from the outside, to examine this issue and come forward with recommendations. And there have been suggestions that the fund is in deep trouble, that there just plain won't be enough money there to pay benefits starting in the middle of calendar 1983. That is a suggestion. We are going to find out. We've taken several steps in the past, as you know, such as interfund borrowing from the various Social Security funds in order to protect the retirement fund part of it. Well, let's wait and see what the commission says, what recommendations they have. If indeed they conclude that something has to be done, then they'll have a recommendation what to do. We'll examine those recommendations and take the one that is best for the present and future retirees.
Senator,
that's our obligation.
Aren't you quoted as saying if any attempt was made to cut the funds that you would lead the charge against it?
I said that there's been never any suggestion to reduce benefits, Harry. That has not come about. The question is, there are several possible approaches. One, of course, is possibly increasing the tax. We've done that in the past. That's a possibility, but let's wait and see. You don't have an expensive commission, and frankly, Harry, you know from your experience up in the State House, and Charlie does too, all too often they have commissions. It's sort of a throwaway thing. Hide the issue, bury the issue by having some commission look at it. That's not the case here. We're putting a lot of money, time, and talent into this commission, and let's hear what they have to say.
Charlie Banks.
Senator, why did you vote last year for an omnibus bill that made at least 8 cuts in Social Security?
Any omnibus bill that took place dealt with in any concerns they had with Social Security. Dealt with not earned benefits, but unearned benefits. What you're particularly talking about is a so-called minimum benefit.
Well, that was one of 8.
Well, the others
there
were...
There was the college benefit, there was a death benefit, there were various changes made in calculations.
Yeah, but
there
those
were at least
had,
8 cuts that were spelled out in the...
Those had nothing to do with retirement, Charlie, as you know, and as you've explained. The retirement benefits are the principal concern under the Social Security Fund, that people will have benefits there when they retire. The only change that was made in retirement benefits dealt with unearned benefits. In other words, they had enacted into the law a side issue which said that if you have not qualified for a certain benefit, then you get it anyway. You get a so-called minimum benefit. And to my judgment, that's a drain in the fund. It takes monies away from those who have contributed the fund faithfully over so many years and gives it to those who haven't earned it.
You're thinking about that $120
minimum. Yeah, that's right. And yes, and the change was made that people get what they earn out of it. And I think the citizens of Rhode Island will agree with me 100% that that's the fair thing to do. You get what you earn out of the fund.
Senator, let me turn to one or two other issues. When people try to assess the upcoming Senate and House races in Rhode Island and around the country, everyone seems to think that the one general common issue is the economy. And you hear talk that, oh, the economy is going to be terrible and the Republicans are really going to get a licking. My specific question for you is, do you think the way the economy is going, that the economy will turn out to be a plus for you or a negative for you?
It's hard to tell, Charlie, but I know this, that I haven't heard anybody come forward with a suggestion of how things should be done differently. This administration has made some dramatic cuts in spending. They have made some tax cuts to encourage incentives, to encourage people to go out and produce to make capital investments, and then it also just recently they passed a major tax bill, tax increase bill. Everybody can argue about Reaganomics and criticize it, but I haven't heard anybody come up with saying how they'd do it differently. And the fact of the matter is the country's been on a binge under Republicans and Democrats for the past 30 years. And now we're seeing the chickens come home to roost. We're seeing something that we didn't think was going to happen. And namely, we all know that in our own households, we can't spend more than we take in for very long or there's trouble. But we've had the feeling the federal government could get away with it. And now it's turning out that the federal government cannot do that, that we're going broke. And it's reflected in the high interest rates, but I see progress being made. When this administration came to office, when President Reagan came to office, the interest rates were 21%. Inflation was nearly, was around 13%. Now inflation is down around 7%, and the interest rates aren't 21%. I'm talking prime, but they're 13.5%. Unfortunately, unemployment is higher. And that's something that is intolerable. And we've got to get this economy going. And I hope, I believe that the tax measure we passed 2 weeks ago was probably the single biggest favorable step toward righting the economy.
Senator, I disagree with you when you say that nobody has come forward and say how they would do things differently. I hear from Mr. Michelson every day about how he would do things differently, which is not to say that it's better, but it's different. And
I know that he has stated that he would not have voted for the tax measure. That tax measure, a bipartisan measure, which had the thorough support of Speaker O'Neill, of Senator Kennedy, of all the Rhode Island delegation, Senator Pell, Congressman St. Germain, Congresswoman Schneider, and myself, was one of the really major plus steps forwards. It was a wonderful thing for the country. What it does, it hits some of the big corporations. There's no question about that. It requires the insurance companies to pay $1.5 billion more taxes than they were paying. It interferes with, won't permit mergers such as U.S. Steel taking over Marathon Oil. And what's more, it provides for the extension of the unemployment compensation for additional weeks, which I think was a very favorable measure, and I was for it.
Well, first of all, Senator, I have to tell you, when I was listening to you speak the other day on the campaign trail in Bristol, and you were saying some of the things you were just saying now, it struck me how odd it was that we have members of Congress going around boasting about raising taxes. It just seemed a little unusual to me. The reason Mr. Michelson said he would have voted against the tax bill was not because he didn't think a tax increase was necessary, but because he didn't like the configuration of this bill.
Well, Charlie, you know that's a great one to do it. When you get in the U.S. Senate, you vote aye or nay. You don't have a chance to vote maybe.
Well, he didn't. He said
up
he
or
would.
Down.
He didn't say maybe. He said he would have voted no.
Well, in that case,
and then,
it would have been a severe blow to the nation to vote no.
Let's just take his theory one step further. He said he would have voted no because he wanted the bill defeated, and then, once it was defeated, redraw it and then pass it. Doesn't that make sense to you?
You don't have those choices, Charlie. When you get in the U.S. Senate, after a bill has been through all kinds of effort to tailor it, to try and get it passed, there it is. And no bill includes everything one wants or has everything in it one likes. But it's up or down, and there's no place for people who can't make up their minds or are indecisive.
Here is an up or down question for you. President Reagan, Wednesday night, spoke on television, called for a fresh start in the Middle East peace process, endorsed full autonomy under some form of Jordanian supervision for Palestinians living in Israeli-occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip, and also demanded a settlement freeze by Israel. My up or down question for you, if you had to vote yes or no on the Reagan proposal, how would you vote?
Well, Charlie,
I know it's not a vote, but
that's right.
For the sake of conversation here.
No, we're not here just for the sake of conversation, Charlie. That is not an up. That's what President Roosevelt called an iffy question. If. I'll say this, that I think that the settlements on the West Bank have been deleterious to the efforts to have a peaceful settlement in the Middle East. And I've been opposed to those settlements I believe that they were contrary to the spirit, if not the letter, of the Camp David Accords, and I believe, in my judgment, the president's on the right track to demand a freeze on those settlements.
Parenthetically, the Jewish parliament has turned down the Reagan proposal.
Yes, Senator, could we continue with the rest of the Reagan proposal about a form of full autonomy under some form of Jordanian supervision for Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip?
Well, I believe that the Palestinians have got to have some place to go. I think that remains the big unsettled issue, and it just can't be overlooked. There you have between the West Bank and the Gaza Strip over a million and a half Palestinians, plus elsewhere in the Middle East you have somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 million more. And they've got to have some place to go. Now, whether this is the approach or not, I don't know. My concern is that I worry that this is appears to me to be a departure from the Camp David Accords. Now, I've got to have a chance to examine this and see whether that is so. It seems to me that in Camp David we made an agreement with both Israel and Egypt. Israel did its part by pulling out of the Sinai, and I would be very reluctant to have us change the ground rules now, but let's see how that fits into the Camp David. That's what I want to ascertain.
Before I came over to the studio, I took a glance at your latest campaign finance report. You received a $2,000 contribution from the Political Action Committee of the Bechtel Corporation from San Francisco. Could you tell us why you got that contribution and why you accepted it?
Well, the Bechtel Corporation is a very fine corporation that does business in all parts of the world for the benefit of the U.S., for the benefit of Bechtel, but also hires U.S. It's U.S.-based. There's no reason in the world I wouldn't take a contribution from Bechtel. Why they happened to send a contribution to me, I don't know. I suspect it was supportive of the efforts I have made in connection with increasing our exports. Something I'm deeply concerned about, the doing everything I can to encourage exports from the U.S. and to remove disincentives against exports.
We had Mr. Michelson on the program, as Harry mentioned earlier. Mr. Michelson was here last week. He said some very terrible things about your efforts on the export front. Why is it that it sounds so different when he talks about it and when you talk about it?
Well, probably because I'm not sure he knows the measures, and maybe he's not concerned with exports. I am deeply concerned with exports, both from a national point of view and also from a state point of view, because the state of Rhode Island is more dependent upon exports than other states are. The state of Rhode Island has something like 13% of its product in exports, which is greater than the national percentage, which is around 8%. One out of every seven workers in Rhode Island's job is dependent on exports. And so I want to do everything I can to, as I say, remove the disincentives and encourage exports. I've held export conferences in the state of Rhode Island to tell small business and medium business how to go about exports, and I want to do everything I can to help with jobs in Rhode Island.
Senator, we were talking about plans.
Harry, if I could just follow this up. All right. I noticed, Senator, you came to the studio prepared today with a long memo about this subject. Is this Mr. Michelson's attacks causing you some problem in this campaign?
No. I think anybody who attacks jobs is on the wrong wicket as far as I'm concerned. I'm pro-jobs. What his position by being against exports is can't help but be harmful to the state, to the workers of the state of Rhode Island. And so I'm going my path, and I'll do everything I can to continue these efforts, because it translates right down in a J-O-B-S, jobs for workers in Rhode Island.
Will you give me a copy of that memo?
Sure, I'll give you a copy of whatever you want here.
Well, the whole memo.
While you two talk about that memo, Senator, an aside here, a fairly simple question. Do you have any sound program in mind which might attract new industries to the shores of Rhode Island and more jobs for Rhode Islanders?
Well, as you know, the most important thing in the state of Rhode Island is to get our own house in order. A major step was taken in that direction last year when the Workman's Comp system, Workman's Comp Act, was changed. Everybody agreed it had to be. There have been all kinds of surveys on about the state of Rhode Island, about what has to be done.
No, but have you got any plans?
Well,
specific plans?
I think every one of these efforts must be continued. And, you know, Rhode Island, because of the laws we have on the books, has now fallen to the unenviable position of being the third lowest manufacturing wage in the nation. And our young, can you think of it? The only states that pay less per hour than this state are Mississippi and North Carolina. And our young people are leaving. We now have the third highest elderly population of any state. That's all due to the unfavorable business climate. Businesses don't want to be here.
Senator Chafee, from where you sit right now, what do you think 1983 looks like here in Rhode Island? Is it going to be the year of the big tax, where we're going to be flooded with taxes and higher unemployment?
Well, the first thing that has to, you're talking on the state level, the first thing they have
to do. Well, these indicators must come from Washington.
No, but I mean, there are a lot of things taking place in the state. This disgraceful reapportionment situation where the state, Democratic state legislatures failed to reapportion the state. Every other state has gotten its reapportionment straightened out. This is scandalous, in my judgment, of what's taking place in the Democratic legislature. And indeed, it had to be thrown out by the court. And when it's through with, it's going to cost the citizens of the state a couple of $1 million. The state says it's short of money, yet it can go ahead and hire all kinds of lawyers. The attorney general doesn't even defend the suits. He goes and hires somebody else. I think Sister Arlene Violet, the Republican candidate for Attorney General, is absolutely on the mark that it's disgraceful that the Attorney General's department doesn't defend these suits.
Senator, can I ask you one or two questions about those points that you're making? First of all, I'm curious to know if you think that is, you know something about dynamite issues that win elections. Why did John Noddy fire Colonel Stone? And issues that lose elections, and we won't talk about that. But is this issue of reapportionment and Dennis Roberts' role in reapportionment in the Democratic legislature, is this the kind of thing that could win that election for Sister Arlene Violet?
I believe that, along with the other issues, sure. I think it's a major issue for her.
And the other question there is, Mr. Roberts says that the reason he hired or authorized the hiring of these various private lawyers, or in some cases recommended their hiring, was that there were different interests involved, that he was representing the Board of Elections and the Secretary of State, whose interest, he says, was in the election process, a speedy election process, whereas another question that came up in the different trials were the specific plans, and that it would be up to legislators or people representing the legislators to speak for those specific plans. Does that make sense to you?
It doesn't really make sense to me. The answer is no.
Senator, I'd like to ask you this. Would it be your opinion that the payment of striker benefits is a deterrent to new industries locating in Rhode Island?
Oh, I think that's been shown every kind of survey that's taken place, it doesn't help. Like so many things, it isn't the amount, but it's the image that it translates, with us being one of two states.
You'd like to see that practice eliminated?
I think fair warning should go out. It shouldn't take place overnight, but I think that that if we want to improve the industrial climate of the state, that's what we got. We've got to make up our mind. Do we want to have good-paying jobs with flourishing industry? Or don't we? Now, that's up for the people who have to make up their minds on that.
Speaking of Chafee, by way of background, I asked the same question of Bill Miller when he was head of Textron, and he said he failed to see where the payment of strikers' benefits was a deterrent.
Well, now, you know, we've had all kinds of... I don't think that's... there's plenty of other problems we've got. I don't want anybody to take the feeling...
I'm not talking about the other...
You saw that you changed that, that everything's hunky-dory in the state. That just isn't so. But that has, in every survey that's been taken by outside consultants. We've had more surveys of this state, and that's one of the issues is constantly mentioned. But there are other problems we've got to wrestle with. Thank goodness this workman's comp thing seems to be on the right track. Power costs are awfully high. What we can do about those, I'm not sure.
Senator, the biggest industrial problem specifically in Rhode Island right now is the Brown and Sharpe strike. The organized labor wants candidates to take stands. One of the things that's going on with that strike is that the unions are trying to pressure people or encourage people to put pressure on Hospital Trust National Bank, get your money out of Hospital Trust, things like that. Do you approve of that campaign?
Oh, I think anybody's entitled to do anything they want as far as that. That's a legitimate tactic, whether it'll succeed or not, but this is perfectly legitimate.
Senator, why did you, why have you and or your campaign refused to debate Mr. Michelson at the Rhode Island Press Club?
Well, what do you mean, refused to? We called up the Rhode Island Press Club and asked them if they wanted to have a debate, and they fudged around and answered that they didn't know and had no, couldn't make up their minds, and thus we went on and accepted a debate arranged by the League of Women Voters. And I've always debated,
and
will debate.
And this station.
And this station. And so there we are. Then after all that was said and done and all arranged, in came the Rhode Island Press Club, girding up their loins a bit late, and
you're looking at the first president, but
yeah,
I'm not president.
But I would like to say,
I don't
belong to the press club, but I'm just curious why. What's the crime in having two debates?
Well, I debate, no point. You kill off the public with cruel and unusual punishment, making them go through
so
too
that's
many.
That's not true. I think I can think of some of the delightful debates in the House of Representatives.
Yes, but this is
when you were House Minority Leader and James H. Cannon used to battle gentlemanly.
This is different.
Can I ask you this? You have some relatives running for office this year. Duncan Doolittle for Lieutenant Governor, Representative Fred Lippitt for Mayor of Providence. A couple of questions. Are you or will you be assisting both of them in the campaign, and what chance do you give them both of being elected?
Well, they're both endorsed candidates. Both of them I'll support to the extent that they wish me to help out. Last week, Duncan Doolittle and I campaigned together in Bristol and went through several plants.
You've been out with Mr. Lippitt?
I haven't been out with Mr. Lippitt. It's up to them to think if I can help or what they'd like me to do. Sure, I'd be always glad.
Do you think he'll be the next mayor of Providence?
I think he has an excellent chance to be the next mayor.
Would you call him an underdog right now? Or?
Well, I think the situation is so cloudy with three candidates in the ring.
It's an unusual situation.
Yes, there's no question about that. I'm not sure. I think they all seem to be about... Well, I think he's got an excellent chance, put it that way.
Okay. Gentlemen, time has gotten the better of us again. Our time is up. My guest tonight on Press Conference, Republican United States Senator John H. Chafee of Rhode Island, who is running for a second term. Thank you, Senator, for taking time to be with us. Lots of good luck. Guest interviewer is the Chief of the Journal Bulletin State House Staff, M. Charles Bax. Thank you, Charlie. My guest next week will be Republican State Chairman John Holmes, Jr. Now this is Harry McKenna saying thank you for listening and bidding you all a very pleasant good night.
The News Authority in Southern New England. You're with WEAN.